Hi Alchemist, welcome back to part two of this ad tech talk. We're going to be discussing a bit of the development that's been going on over the past few months because, again, we've been away for quite a while. So it's time we gave everyone a bit of an update of all the magic that you've been creating within the development team.
Thanks, Joe. Welcome everybody to this new episode. To give you a taste of what's happening behind the scenes, number one, Labs V2. We launched Labs V2 and we've got some great feedback. Thank you so much. There's a lot of work that's still coming on Labs V2. Please look forward to it. Moving on from Labs V2, we managed to launch the MVP of the DSA. So the DSA itself is, we can look at it in two stages. One is the legacy DSP, which is the demand side platform. And then stage two is where we enhance a legacy DSP with the cool tech of AI, and we then have the AI-powered DSP, which is what we refer to as the DSA. But before we move in to more details of what it is, do you surely want to give an overview of what a DSP is?
Yeah, I think for the uninitiated, it's a lot of acronyms within ad tech because that's obviously a bit of a barrier to entry for people. But yeah, a DSP is a demand-side platform. It's essentially the buying tool that is used by advertisers and agencies who are representing advertisers in order to like book their impressions on certain websites, certain categories of websites, targeted individuals. All those sorts of things are available within a DSP. So it's quite a powerful tool for anybody trying to buy any media, really. And then within that, you can add on a lot of other tools to make it work more effectively. So you might include a DMP, like a data management platform, which will have information about your target users and cookies that you're looking for across the web and all those sorts of things. So, and then being able to set a price at which you want to buy those users at. So you might have a category that's more desirable that you might want to pay £1.50 for, and you might have one that is general, anybody that you'll pay a lower price for. So it really gives the buyer a lot of options. And that's kind of really the programmatic part of the whole exchange. Although everything's interacted with in real time, the actual programming bit is really done within the DSP.
That's true. And there's a lot of complicated logic within the DSP itself. For example, targeting in itself is such a big field. And targeting, whether it's contextual targeting, whether it is cookie-based targeting, or the Web3 wallet ID-based targeting as well, it's got so many different layers to it. And with targeting comes the complexity of how you use the targeting data in order to bid for ad inventory that you're interested in. So how do you layer all of the targeting data along with the data that you're receiving as part of the bid request, real-time data really, like the geography of the user, the website that they're visiting, the content that they are trying to access, the language in which the content is written, along with the contextual data, the segments that the user is part of, all of that will then be used to determine what is the best campaign to show to that particular user on that website at that time of day. Also, it's not just what campaign should be shown to the user, but it's also about how much the advertiser or the brand is willing to pay to the publisher in order to show their brand, their product to that particular user. Because at the end of the day, the bottom line is the value of an advertisement is based solely on the likelihood of the user buying that product.
Yeah, it's all about engagement, really. So it also allows the buyer to just create their own strategies around that. So that's kind of what differentiates different media agencies from one another, is potentially their buying strategies, whether they buy stuff in advance and get a discount rate from publishers, or whether they, you know, are better at finding random cookies across the open web, or whether they have good PMP deals in place. All of those sorts of things are what makes up a potential buying strategy for any advertiser or any media agency.
Exactly. That's the whole challenge involved in showing an ad to a user. So yes, we are moving from just a legacy vanilla DSP to a DSA. To talk a little bit more about how the DSA is different from a DSP, we need to understand the problems that are associated with a legacy DSP. Some of the key problems that I would like to touch upon is, number one, the barrier to entry, which is how easy or difficult is it to set up a campaign based on the parameters that the media agency or the brand want to target. So that becomes one key concern, where there is a lot of training, a lot of operational overhead in setting up campaigns. That's problem number one. Number two is the bidding strategies, the strategy or the decision on which campaign to show to which user and how much to bid in order to show that ad to that particular user is fairly complicated and is not the most advanced at this point in time. So that has the potential to actually determine how much of money is being spent to put the right ad in front of the right user who's likely to buy it. That's number two. Number three is reporting and metrics, where not a lot of intelligence is actually available in determining the different data points that are available for the brands and the media agencies and how they can leverage all of that data in getting key insights and wisdom on how they can better advertise their product, how they can make better use of the ad spend that they have available to them, how they can better target the users that they are looking to sell their product to. So these are some of the key concerns of a legacy DSP.
I'd probably throw in, was it a fourth one? In that the people using it within a team are often not adhering to the same standards as each other. So, or the findings that they might get from the way they run a certain strategy is not then translated to everybody else using it. So you might think of that, everyone else in their own little network using that particular DSP. We found that a lot with everybody we were speaking to about the DSA is that maintaining those even within their own teams in, say, the UK is quite difficult. But then when you take that campaign across Europe, you don't have that translated across those different users. So using AI tools to actually enforce those kind of standards or business practices that you've found to work in different regions, having AI to enforce that obviously makes it a lot easier for the agency to maintain what is good practice, I guess, across different regions.
Absolutely. And these are some of the key concerns that we are trying to battle with. And we're using AI in order to make all of these areas more easy to use. Firstly, what we are doing is to have a chatbot-like interface, a ChatGPT-like interface, where people can just enter the parameters of their campaign and they will be presented with a draft campaign. So there isn't a lot of training that is involved in setting up campaigns, in determining what the targeting parameters are. So using plain English, like you would interact with ChatGPT, you can actually create a draft campaign. Then you can, as a user, you can just review the parameters of the campaign. And then once you're happy with it, you click go and your campaign is live. It should be as simple as that, which is what the DSA strives to achieve from the DSP.
Yeah, I think everybody's kind of got this fear that AI is going to take their jobs. And we always have a theory within Alchemy that AI will actually just replace UI, which is not necessarily intuitive. That's quite a lot of work that people have to do to create the most intuitive platforms possible. Just look at Facebook or whoever. But really, using certain tools becomes more difficult, and you have to have help sections and all those other things to help people actually interact with whatever UI it is. It's much easier if that's done through AI, because everyone knows how to speak English. And what happens sometimes is terminology is different to what you think it might be when you're using a certain UI. But having an AI with a large, you know, language model actually helping you through that process makes a lot of sense, really.
Absolutely. Even if language is a barrier, it then becomes very simple for us to roll out the same intelligence in different languages as well. Mm-hmm. So catering to different audiences of different languages and different locations and geographies is no more a problem.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely an area where that will be helpful, is kind of a lot of people within agencies use a certain DSPs at the moment, but there is a very large SME section, especially within the United States, for example, and Europe, where these people probably work across different countries within Europe. There's definitely a language barrier there. But in terms of using a platform, that is kind of what Google did very well with AdWords. That's kind of how they made most of their money, is by smaller and medium-sized enterprises using their platform and buying all the kind of more long-tail inventory across the whole of the internet. So it really does open up a whole kind of different market to us as well in that kind of SME space. I mean, an SME within America is probably as big as a, you know, large company within the UK. So it makes a lot of sense to give them the tools to be able to, you know, reach across our network as well.
Absolutely. And the second key feature of the DSA is that we will support real-time bidding strategies. And all of this will be based on data that we're using, we are collecting using our campaigns that are currently live, and how the data is going to be used to train the AI model, so that the AI engine is then able to determine what price to bid at for which campaign based on real-time data and data that is derived from the DMP, for example. So all of that data will be put together, and then the AI engine will be able to state to the DSA what is the best price to be bidding at based on the likelihood of that user buying the product.
And I think that will really help with the sort of fair value pricing that we talk about, because ultimately we're winning a lot of bids at the moment because there's only a few advertisers using it, and we're going up against people doing it the old way, which is kind of more of a race to the bottom. How cheaply can you buy something? But when we start to have quite a few different advertisers also bidding on the same impressions, it'll really help them understand why they're not winning, what kind of price point they need to be at to be winning that impression. And if there's any other times of the day, I guess, or any other parameters that they could possibly change within their campaign to help them be more likely to win that user.
Absolutely. Just to flip it around, we are currently talking about the media agency and the brand side of things. But if you look at the publisher side of things, the publisher will need information and real-time strategies on how to place their floor bid price, which is the minimum price that they are willing to accept for any ad slot. So based on any time of the day or geography or content or any external events, if the publisher is able to know the floor bid price should not be there, it should be there, you're immediately increasing the revenue that the publisher is making for the same inventory. And that is something that the DSA and our AI engines will enable us to do. So add value, save money, and increase revenues both on the demand and the supply side.
Yeah, that's going to be very handy, I think. But moving on in our sort of development that's been going on in the last few months, there's a very big piece that I know you're excited to talk about, and I'm very excited for it to roll out as well. So should we move on to the validators?
Absolutely. So that's a big piece of work that we are working on, the opening up of the network of validators to the community. And there's virtually everybody in the company is buzzing. They're working towards that single goal of opening up of the validator network. What we intend to do, Joe, is to take this in small steps. We will not be rolling out in one big release, but we will have multiple small steps that will lead to the opening of the validators to the community. Let's talk about what are the different steps that are involved. The first step that will be involved in opening up of validators is the release of the reward estimators. And we have spoken about the reward estimators before as well. And the reward estimators become an integral part, an integral step in the opening up of validators to the community. And the reason I say that is once the network has opened up, people will need to determine, based on information that is made available to them, based on their speculation, based on their assumptions, whether they would want to be a validator or whether they want to be an LP provider, a liquidity provider. So the reward estimator is going to enable them to make that key decision. So what the reward estimator will do is, number one, we are already in the process of exposing the quarterly revenue that we make. So based on that, people will be able to determine the revenue and the number of validators that are currently on the network, the number of ADS tokens that are already locked in the LP, and their waitlist number on when once the validator network opens up. Based on all of this, they will be able to determine what is the likely quarterly reward that they will make as a validator. Similarly, the reward estimator will also let them know what is the likely APY that they will make should everything remain the same, right? So the reward estimator is an estimator, which is it works based on the values that are fed into it. The output is as accurate or as close to reality as the input values are. So we will endeavor to put as much of information as we can out to the community, like, for example, the quarterly revenue figures. But based on all of these figures, people will be able to make that key decision of whether they want to be a validator or a liquidity provider.
I mean, as a degen myself, I instantly think, so the information is going to be pre-populated, but people will be able to change certain things as well, right? So although we have told everyone how much fee revenue there will be this quarter, you could probably then make a guess about what it will be next quarter, or, you know, just in a year's time, you could also put that information in and then, you know, spit out a number.
Absolutely. In fact, we are working towards providing aggregated numbers of daily transaction values, you know, the number of transactions that are going through the Ads Explorer. That should be a good indicator for people to determine, okay, here's the number of transactions. Where were we 6 months from now? Where are we now? Where are we likely to be another 3 months, 6 months down the line based on all the information and the industry, how it's moving? And those will be numbers which can be used in order to determine whether to be a validator or to be a liquidity provider.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's definitely something to get excited about, especially because people have been asking a lot of questions about kind of what the rewards have been. There is obviously a formula on the website, but that's not necessarily that easy for some people to translate. So just having a calculator to input all that information is perfect. And I think people can start to hazard a guess as to how many rewards they'll be picking up from being in the LP or being in a validator. So that's great.
Absolutely. So once the reward estimator has been rolled out, we will obviously do another AMA, or we will do another podcast explaining, or even a screen grab explaining what the different input parameters are and how they can use the reward estimator. So that is something that we will definitely do. But once the reward estimator has been rolled out, that is what starts the process. That is step number one. Step two is where we will open up the network for people to lock up their collateral and mint an NFT. So the NFT is going to be your in-wallet collateral to be able to be accepted on the network. So anybody can spin up a cloud instance, right? But not every cloud instance can actually become a validator. The primary criteria to become a validator is that that particular cloud instance is linked to a wallet which contains an NFT. And that NFT needs to be activated, and that will allow your cloud instance to function as a validator, to validate transactions, and in turn be rewarded for that processing power that people are giving to the project.
Yeah, it's not a system that I've personally seen before, but I mean, since starting out, I've probably not kept up with all the plethora of different validators that you can run, or nodes or whatever. But that as a key essentially to your node seems like a really smart way of doing it. And I think the other thing that's important for people to realize is that it serves a secondary purpose, doesn't it? So it'll tell people the current status of their validator, and it means that we can also, if they lose their Soulbound wallet that their NFT is in, we can actually just mint them a new one and invalidate the old one, which helps with security on the network.
Absolutely. So these NFTs will be Soulbound NFTs, which means it will be non-transferable. And that should still be okay because, you know, the network is open, so anybody can actually lock up their collateral and mint an NFT. So we don't see a reason for people to sell their NFTs, like on OpenSea, for example. But in this case, because the network is open, anybody can come in and mint an NFT by locking up the collateral rather than buying an NFT in a secondary market.
Yeah, it keeps the price of the collateral, I guess, very consistent as well. Stops that kind of secondary market where people are selling on something because it's commoditized, essentially.
Absolutely. And there will also be a process where people can actually burn their NFT should they make the decision to move to an LP from a validator. That will mean that the collateral that is locked up is given back to the same wallet which held the NFT. So that is a process that will come. So the second step that we were referring to after the reward estimator is people locking up their collateral and minting an NFT, a soulbound NFT, into their wallet. That would be the second step. As part of this step, they will also be given a waitlist number. And that is going to lead us to the third step, where the team is going to approve a certain number of validators over a certain period of time. And that will then activate the NFT, which means that the NFT can then be used to register a validator. So once that activation has happened, users can then spin up a cloud instance and then link the NFT in their wallet to that particular cloud instance. And then off you go. Your validator is ready to validate transactions and start receiving the rewards.
You missed out one step though, which is to join the Discord channel with other validators. But it's also a good place for people to troubleshoot problems they might be having setting up their cloud instance, or you know, just to talk about how great it is that they're a validator, I guess.
Absolutely. So we will have a Discord channel which will be NFT gated as well. So it will be only for validators with the NFTs that are activated. So they can come onto that Discord channel and pose any questions and get the required support that they need. In fact, that actually brings me to a very important product development that we're doing as well, which is to build AI bots, which will be integrated into Discord, into Telegram, where people can actually ask questions. And instead of a human answering the question, we will endeavor to have the AI bot provide all the requisite answers that will then help resolve these problems. That should reduce any operational overhead that will be involved when the network is open to hundreds or thousands of people.
Yeah, that's great. I think there's a lot of tools that are coming, especially for validators, once we've rolled that out to everybody. I think those are some of the things you were talking about happening in Labs V2 as well. Or the upgrade of Labs V2, so maybe 2.1, I guess. But then they'll be able to see a lot more information about their validator and how that's running and how many transactions they've actually validated.
Absolutely. So all of that information will be made available to the users on the Alchemy Labs. And while this is not currently on the roadmap, what we are working towards is to build a chatbot into Alchemy Labs, where people can come in and ask questions about their validator, about their role in the soft staking pool once they have obviously logged in using their primary wallet. Or you can ask generic questions about data from the Ads Explorer. Or you can ask generic questions about Alchemy, about the problem that we are solving, about the solution that we have in place. How is our solution different from any of the others that are existing in the market? So all of that will be made available using a chatbot that will be integrated into Alchemy Labs. So that's something that we're working on, currently not seen on the roadmap, but it will come in good time.
I think the one thing that we've kind of missed out on as well is the timelines for that, because that's one thing that everybody's going to want to know.
Yes, that's true, especially for the validators. So we are looking at rolling out the reward estimator in the month of August, and we will obviously do a lot of messaging, a lot of podcasts and screen grabs on how reward estimators will work, all the information that we can give them, give the users that will help them make that decision on whether they want to become a validator or an LP. So all of that information will be provided in the month of August. And come September, we call it the Validator Month, where we want to open the network where people can come and lock up their collateral and mint their NFTs. And then periodically, we will review all the NFTs that have been minted, and we will activate those NFTs. So that will then enable them to go on and spin up a cloud instance, register their validators on our portal, on Alchemy Labs portal, and then have their validator validating the transactions and collecting rewards. So all of that is targeted for the month of September. So hopefully we should have a lot more validators come Q4, which is where we will need additional bandwidth.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing that people have been talking about quite a lot is we're opening up the network. Is there going to be enough rewards for everybody based on kind of this quarter's rewards? But the rewards in this quarter are obviously ones that have accrued last quarter. This quarter is looking a lot better in terms of transactions that we've got going on. And obviously Q4 is even better. So there is obviously way more demand coming through the network. And as part of that, we do need to support it with the requisite number of validators, both in terms of bandwidth numbers overall, but also in terms of potential locations that they might be.
That's true. And there are two points to actually add to that. Number one is we need to open the network of validators, not just based on the number of transactions. We need to open the network to make it more decentralized. So the more the number of users on the network, the more decentralized and hence better the security. So it's a step in decentralizing the whole protocol rather than just trying to throttle the number of validators that we have. And point number two is we want to give people as much information as possible in making an informed decision whether to become a validator or not, right? Some people may say, I want to become an LP, a liquidity provider, or some people may say, I want to become a validator, because each has its own advantages and people may make that decision based on their risk appetite. So we want to provide all the information and the tools that will help them make that decision. And when you make that decision to become a validator, we don't want to hold you back. That is when opening up the network will then enable you to become a validator. So step number one is you make that informed decision based on the tools and the information that have been provided. You make your own decision, do your own research on whether you want to become a validator or not. And then once you decide that you want to become a validator, the network will not hold you back. The network is open for anybody to become a validator at any point in time. If you so decide that you want to step back and become an LP, then the reward estimator, based on the values, will help you make that decision. And then you can take a step back as you would like. So it's not a question of whether there are enough rewards. It is a question of, do I want to be a validator or not, based on the information that I have, revenue included, transactions included, and my risk appetite. So that is a very subjective decision. I don't think it is a decision that is based solely on one number, which is the quarterly revenue. There are multiple bits of information that will help people make that decision. And we just want to enable people to make that decision. And once that decision has been made, give them the ability to become a validator without holding people back.
Yeah, I think the two things to consider for most people are the fact that not all of your ad tokens that you put into the LP are ones that get rewards, because 20% of it is then turned into ETH, so those don't count. But also the cost of running a validator. I know that's one thing that we're currently working on, so I think that's probably obviously going to decrease that worry for people. There's also maybe the technical skill of doing it, but yeah, at the moment they're $100 each, but we are planning on bringing that down as far as possible. Exactly. And that's currently being tested, so we can't necessarily give a number, although I'm sure everyone would want us to, but it's going to be quite a big reduction.
Absolutely. And that is one of the key concerns that we had, which is to be able to reduce that operating cost as much as we can, while still be able to support the kind of transactional numbers that we are looking forward to. And we don't want to be held back by the bandwidth that is available to us. And hence, we don't want to be telling people, look, our network cannot support you or the number of transactions that you're going to be sending us. So there is that balance between what is the operating cost of a validator versus what is the amount of bid requests or transactions that we are looking forward to receiving that will then maximize the revenue. So we need to have that balance between the two, and opening up the validator network will give us that balance, because while keeping the operating costs down, it will also enable us to scale horizontally, which means we will still have the bandwidth that is required in order to support the number of transactions that we want to.
Yeah, we kind of have to have that built-in redundancy, I guess, for peak times and kind of times that are, you know, less busy on the network. But there is also that kind of win rate, I think, also probably plays into that a little bit. As our win rate drops due to us having more and more campaigns, we'll probably need more validators to kind of make up for that, those lost notices that are getting put on the network.
Absolutely. And there's so much of other work that is happening related to that, like, for example, bid shaping. Bid shaping in itself is a huge topic of discussion, and we are using AI to make the decisions on how best to shape the bids. And I know, Cho, you're extremely well-versed in bid shaping, and I know Choli can talk about bid shaping for hours together. So that's probably for another episode.
Yeah, probably one in itself. It's a bit of a dark art, and I think what we really like to get to is a point where we don't need to shape any bids. I think some of that is down to being able to identify individual impressions, which we have a much better chance of doing, where a lot of the time, say you're a publisher who has multiple people bidding on your site, you end up with quite a lot of repeat bids, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. And being able to identify what is a repeat bid and what isn't, and only process one, I think that's kind of the best kind of bid shaping, rather than just kind of randomly cutting out certain bids because they're low value or whatever it might be.
That's true. And these are features that are not likely to be seen by the community, but these are essential for us to maintain the network, for us to ensure that the ad exchange and the DSA are operating as efficiently as possible. And that is something that is being worked on in all earnest. And we're using AI as much as possible to ensure that, you know, we are able to make those decisions in real time and achieve the efficiencies that we want to.
Nice.
There's actually one other update that I want to provide, which is, you know, I do see a few concerns in the community about the amount of technical skills that will be required in order to operate such validators. And while, again, this is not on the roadmap, not something that's actively seen, we are working towards providing some sort of a alchemy bidder feature where people can go for something like a managed service where there's an intermediary which can actually manage validators and not and allow people the comfort of not keeping up the health of their validators, ensuring that security patches are installed. All of that can be probably delegated to an intermediary. That's something that we are looking into itself in order to alleviate the concerns of people not having the requisite technical skills. But that's something that's a little too preliminary now to talk about.
Yeah.
But that's something that's on our radar as well, based on the concerns that the community have raised.
Yeah, not one for this year, I don't think.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, well, the speed at which the team works, anything's possible. Okay, well, I think that probably draws a close to everything we wanted to talk about on the product development front, right?
Absolutely. I know there's a lot we could spend hours talking about product development and every feature that we are working on. But those were the main highlights that I wanted to put in front of the community. And yeah, so exciting times. Please do look forward to the opening up of the validators. And we'll be in touch soon with a lot of new updates and information. Yeah, so look forward to it.
Yeah, keep an eye on all of the social channels. Discord is a great one to start joining now, because there'll be a special validator section within there what already exists. You'll be able to join that. But all of the information will be across Telegram, Discord, X, everything. So just keep an eye out. And the month of September is going to be a big one for everyone, I think.
Yes, absolutely. I look forward to speaking to all of you in more detail once the reward estimator rolls out. And yeah, look forward to the opening up of the validator. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Catch you next time.